everyone, and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live, the podcast. I'm Catherine Murphy, the political editor of Guardian Australia, and this week we're talking about journalism and politicians and social media. My guest this week is a wonderful woman by the name of Caroline Fisher. Currently, she is the Assistant Professor of Journalism at the University of Canberra. Prior to that, though, Caroline was an ABC journalist for quite a long period of time, and she's also been a ministerial staffer. She worked for Anna Bligh in Queensland for several years. So she's a great voice because she's seen our profession both as a practitioner, as a ministerial staffer, and now latterly as an academic who studies various trends, including how social media is impacting on journalism and particularly on political content. That's her area of expertise. So over the next little while, we're going to bash around several things, including a new digital media survey that she is the co-author of. That's a global survey that came out, about 3 weeks ago. It has some very interesting findings. So why don't we drop in at right about there, which is the beginning of our conversation. So a couple of weeks ago, we got a new survey about digital media habits, a global survey, but also with Australian implications. Some really interesting stuff in that. Let's take the listeners through the sort of what picture that paints about what people are doing in terms of their media habits.
Okay. Look, it paints a mixed picture. It paints to be absolutely clear, it's about our digital news consumption. Okay. So it paints a mixed picture. It shows that we're actually very interested in news, that so around about 63% of online Australians think that, you know, they're highly or extremely interested in news. So that's a good thing. But on the other hand, they also say that they're trying to avoid news. So more than half of Australians actually try to avoid it. So they're interested in it, but they also are trying
not
to
too
get
much
away from it. That's right. And again, interestingly, you know, people are interested, you know, mostly in local news, international news, crime, not so much politics, actually. perhaps that's not so surprising. It shows that mainstream media sources, particularly television, are still the main source of information for people. But that's, there's a big generational shift on, and I guess we've known that, but this report really confirmed it, that mm-hmm. for us, the younger people are definitely social media.
Yes.
They're accessing social media to get to news and not so much traditional. However, they're not using traditional media. They're poly users.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what's really clear as well. It's not either or. It's that people are accessing stuff, you know, from everywhere.
Yeah.
But a big, you know, big consumption in social media and for younger people.
I was quite interested in your commentary about the Australian implications of that research, and you touched on an area of what is particular expertise of yours, which is politicians and their social media habits and their sort of increasing use of social media. I think you said in your commentary that obviously they're using it more and more as a workaround us, basically, but they might be preaching to the converted.
Absolutely.
That was quite interesting. So why don't we sort of work through that a little bit?
Okay. So for the first time, we asked specifically questions about, are people following politicians on social media, following their, you know, their feeds directly, what type of party, left, right, etc., and why? And we asked those questions actually because of a broader research project that I'm doing. But I had these questions inserted into the survey, and six other countries also ran the questions. What we found was that around 20% of adult, you know, Australian online consumers are following politicians on social media, following directly. Interestingly, about 75% of them are following parties of the left and centre. And so, you know, the remainder parties of the right. On the whole, they tend to be young people. So in the, you know, 25 to 34 age bracket, they tend to be male.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, it's what's obvious is that clearly the parties of the left are much better at targeting, you know, their people and, you know, reaching their target audience better. But clearly all of the parties are doing really badly at attracting women to follow them follow politicians on social media. So that's really interesting. Internationally, though, it's similar. That again, it's people of the left, parties of the left, most followed on social media. And I guess, you know, when you look at the strategy that's being employed by the Liberal Party, the Conservatives in Australia at the moment, there's an acknowledgement that they haven't been very good at social media. You know, they've been launching their new websites and all the rest of it to try and, you know,
catch up a bit.
Yeah. And so, I mean, these figures, you know, support that they've been really lagging in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And also I was interested that people are tending to follow people with whom they agree.
Yeah, very much.
That they're not sort of out just fossicking madly to pick up, you know, whatever you might find out there in the big bad webiverse. They're specifically sort of fangirling or fanboying particular, you know, people that they support. And so what are the implications of all of that?
Well, I think those concerns about echo chambers, polarisation, et cetera, I think that this data kind of, you know, gives weight to all of those concerns because, of the people who do follow, only 3% of them actually follow a party from the left and the right.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. That is amazing to me.
Yeah, and only 12% kind of follow parties across all, you know, across, you know, left, right, and centre. So it's a very small percentage. But basically, people are sticking, you know, they follow the parties and politicians of the side that they agree with. Also, people tend, you know, and where they were asked, you know, whether or not in other questions, whether or not, you know, the people that on social media, do you share the same sorts of views
mm-hmm.
as your other friends on social media? And yes, basically. So, and that's particularly of the left. Those who follow right-wing politicians, they're less inclined to think that their friends on social media share their political views. Right, right. But the left followers, yep, they're all really speaking to each other.
Yeah,
very
right.
Very much.
Yeah. And so the implications, because, like, if we step back from this, the stats, and think about sort of human behaviour, obviously politicians are taking to social media because obviously it represents, it's a great opportunity to communicate with an audience without a pesky journalist in there filtering or moderating the conversation between the parliamentarian and the voter. But you know, you sort of get the impression that politicians are kind of grabbing this work around enthusiastically, thinking, oh, yes, okay, we can forge out into new territories. But your research seems to say, well, maybe not.
Well, it's a mixed picture. So, I mean, interestingly, it's not just the pollies who are, you know, who see the benefits in the workaround. Mm-hmm. This data shows that the audience does too.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
So that's, I mean, in some ways that bothers me more.
you're a good woman. You're a good woman. No, we do need to acknowledge that, and I just glossed over that entirely inadvertently, but I did.
It's fine, because one of the questions, you know, that they were asked, you know, the options, you know, one of the boxes they were able to tick as to why are they choosing to follow pollies, the box most ticked was to do with the fact that I prefer to hear directly from the politician or the political party than have their views filtered by others. So... now, that doesn't necessarily mean I don't trust the media or whatever, but it's saying I want control over, I want to read it all or hear it all for myself, and I'll make my own decisions about the content. I don't want someone to edit it for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that sense, I think it demonstrates that section of the audience is wanting to exert some control over what they're reading or hearing, in a similar way to, I guess, in the way that politicians can exert more control on the way they're framed and they present themselves to their audience, you know, because, again, they're not being edited by a
pesky
third party.
Pesky intermediaries like journalists.
Pesky, that's right. Highly necessary pesky intermediaries.
Right, so I'll say it again, you're a good woman.
Now, look, what's interesting is, I mean, so in addition to this survey, and like I say, I got these questions inserted into this survey as part of a broader project that I'm looking at. And that is to do with this thing, you know, you can call it self-publishing. It's also called in academia, you know, disintermediation, which means basically not being mediated, not being edited, filtered by the media. And I was kind of really keen to see, well, to what extent is that our politicians and their advisors choosing that option?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we see clearly the big populist world leaders, Trump, the prime example, doing this, and we're very familiar with it happening at that level. But I thought, well, actually, everyone actually has this capability now. So who is taking advantage of it? To what extent is it happening? So, I've been doing this little pilot project, and it's small, and I've been doing it with some colleagues in Ireland as well to do a bit of a comparison. But that's involved doing a bit of what we call a content analysis, looking at social media outputs and mainstream media outputs of five political leaders. Of our main parties. I've been following what they did over a particular month. And then I also did some anonymous interviews with media advisors, who didn't work for those politicians.
Right.
Otherwise, I couldn't guarantee their anonymity.
Yes.
But I did get them from a breadth of parties, etc. And what's interesting about that is, the key to all of this and all the troubles that are being experienced at the moment is, well, what is the audience doing? And for politicians, there's only any point in bypassing and using social media directly if you've got a big enough audience.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so otherwise it's not worth it. If you're a mainstream politician, you still want the mainstream media because that's the middle ground and they're the people you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
You can't win government from the fringe.
Yeah.
So if you're a mainstream party, one of the majors, you still need mainstream media. And as one media advisor put it, he said, it's like playing a guitar with five strings instead of four. You still need the other four, but now you've got an extra string, So it's very much what we call, a hybrid media approach.
Yeah, they're not ditching us altogether.
No. But then when you look to the miners, then, of course, it's a different story. And there's a couple of reasons for it. One is, I guess, pretty much what we see with, Trump, kind of illustrates this in this kind of hostility towards the media.
Yes.
If they perceive a hostile media, then they'll try to circumvent it. And, of course, we see that with Pauline and her refusal to speak to the ABC, et cetera. So the miners, we see that. So if they feel they're getting a rough go by, in the mainstream media, then that will encourage them more. So certainly we're seeing that with the miners here. But the other thing being that, depending on your demographic, depending on who actually votes for you, they may not be on mainstream media anyway.
Yes.
So that's the other reason. They all use, social media clearly is good for activating your base.
Yes.
In that sense, you are preaching to your converted. But depending on your demographic, and if you, for instance, got a young audience, then social is going to be the place and people will share and, you've got a greater chance of actually increasing your vote via social. For the mainstream media, that's, like I say, it's for the sort of major parties, mainstream media is still a really, really important part of the equation.
Mm.
But great, you see a real shift though. So, for instance, Malcolm Turnbull recently, he's gone, instead of his sort of making sideways shift from talkback radio. I mean, he still does 3AW regularly, but he's turned down requests from other talkback stations. And in fact, he's been using Facebook Live.
Yes,
there have been comments around about that he wants Facebook Live to be his, talkback radio.
Mm.
So we can see that there's an active choice being made there.
Yeah.
And that has to be about the audience.
Oh, it is, I think. But in his case particularly, it is a feeling that a lot of traditional outlets that the coalition would normally use in government in order to get its message out are hostile to this particular prime minister. The government's got, or the prime minister, I should specify, because we are talking about the prime minister, faces quite significant barriers to clear communication on 2GB, for example, and on Sky. Sydney Talkback particularly, I think, is quite hostile to Malcolm Turnbull. So I think it is, and also, again, while we're mea culpring, while I'm not glossing over the fact that the audience is switching off us, because they would prefer to actually get the information directly rather than have us filter the bits that we think are important. Mm. I think certainly political leaders over the last sort of, the latter part of this decade, certainly over the last sort of 5 years or so, have found the political news cycle so chaotic and so slippery in terms of that they are genuinely looking for other ways to try and get a message out.
Well, that's what social media does. It gives you, it gives you a moment of control.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I mean, in the traditional relationship, you've never had any control. Yes, you write your press release and that's your moment of control. But once it leaves your, you know, your fax machine in the good old days, that's it. You had no control of how it would be interpreted, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got this moment of control where you are pressing the publish button and it's either, you know, a pre-recorded video or whatever. It's going out there. Your message is clear. It can't be edited. It goes straight to your audience. Sure, the analysis and stuff can follow. But in that moment, you're in control. And that's one step more control than they had under the old system. Now, of course, you can't control it from that, and it could go viral and it could get trolled and it could become ugly. You can't control then what happens to it.
Yeah.
But your clear statement of this is my bit of propaganda or this is my latest policy announcement or whatever, no matter, you know, how benign or malign it might be, I can control that.
Yeah.
And that's attractive.
And what do you think in terms of the sum of your research, how big a problem do you think this is for us, for mainstream media journalists?
Look, I think at the moment, because mainstream media is still necessary, I think you're okay. But basically it depends on what the audience is doing. Once the audience really, and it's only a matter of time. If you really look at who is consuming what where, okay, so if you look at that, if you follow that generational shift where people really under 34 are, you know, on particularly 25, 18 to 25, but once, you know, it's only a matter of years before that really gets, you know, becomes the largest section of the, you know, of the viewing, well, news-consuming population is on social.
Yes.
And whatever comes next, which we don't know what that is yet.
And we should be clear, because not all listeners will necessarily know that that people who are getting news through social media are quite removed from the mastheads that are creating
absolutely,
that news.
Absolutely.
I mean, some people, of course, are connected to the mastheads and understand that they're reading something from the New York Times or from Guardian Australia or from the Telegraph or whomever. Sort of people who have grown up with a connection to those mastheads. But now, because things are sort of kind of appearing in people's feeds, they're not first identifying with a masthead and understanding, well, this is journalism from this particular organisation.
No, that's
right. It's
just
coming sort of organically, although, you know, with a lot of help from the algorithms, into their feed. So there's sort of two levels of separation potentially going on that people, this demographic, this, you know, our next sort of generation of news consumers are not tied to mastheads really anymore, don't really even get it. Are getting this news in a sort of unstructured way, and also just from the politicians themselves, or from companies, or from whomever, you know.
Well, that's right. It's kind of what Facebook talks about, this informative content. You know, that you know, their definition of news is pretty broad. You know, what is actually on the news feed is not necessarily traditional reportage. That may be part of the mix, but actually, it could be from, you know, a range of, you know, information based.
Anything.
It could be anything. Yeah, it could be editorial. It could be from a politician. It could be from
a pressure group.
That's right. Yeah. And people will share it if they want to. They'll follow it if they want to. That's right. And you say to somebody, "Oh, where'd you read that?" You know, and they say, "Oh, Facebook." Mm. You know, they won't necessarily make the next step. It might have been a Guardian story, but they saw it on Facebook, so they're identifying with Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yes, of course, that's got its own consequences.
No, and also we should finish up. I mean, we could actually go on about this. For the listeners will know. We'll fathom. We could go on about this for ages. But we should talk briefly, I think, about the new Senate inquiry into public interest journalism, I think is its rather wonderful grand title.
Yeah.
You've been involved in that as well, haven't you?
Certainly, with our most recent report about, you know, giving this most recent snapshot of the state of the media, really, in Australia, we've certainly put our latest report as a submission, and I've also particularly, you know, pointed to this research around following politicians as well, because, you know, it's part of the discussion around, you know, fake news, partisan news, this kind of general kind of, you know, non, you know, poorly defined informative content that's out there, that people don't necessarily know the source of it, they don't know the veracity of it, etc. It gets shared by a friend, they trust a friend, they, you know, no one's actually testing it, there's no scrutiny applied to it, and the consequences of that from a democratic perspective. And so when we're talking about public interest journalism, you know, it's a whole combination of things. If we've got a decline in newsrooms, if we've got fewer staff, who have now more content to scrutinise. So not only the odd press release, it's still, God, do they even come out via email anymore? Mm. But every social media post a politician puts out there, which might be several times a day. I mean, it's not possible. The amount of content, political partisan content being created, and the number of journalistic, you know, gatekeeping eyeballs.
God
are
knows,
diminishing.
We try.
Yeah,
we try,
that's right.
But your head does explode at a certain point in time.
You know, of course. So that's... There's a tipping point here, you know. Add to that, you know, very strict freedom of information laws. Add to that other restrictions, you know, in being able to produce journalism, whether it be defamation or otherwise. I mean, there's a whole range, the national security laws, there's a whole range of pressures at play here which are making it harder for journalists to access information and to scrutinise information, and making it easier for people with interests beyond the public interest, whether it be political interest, self-interest, commercial interest, whatever interest, to target their audience directly and bypass that gatekeeper. And that you know, that this needs to be considered in this whole debate around the future of public interest journalism.
And from the point of view of journalism academics and experts, are you hopeful of being able to influence the government sort of to try and get some attention on this? Obviously, there's a big package of media reforms that's yet to pass the parliament,
yeah,
despite
right.
the government's best efforts. Mm. What do you, are you hopeful that you might be able to get the government to focus on this?
Me personally,
I
mean,
says.
Look, the fact that the Senate inquiry is even happening, I think is fantastic, because it speaks to, I'm hoping that it speaks to an awareness in, you know, amongst political elites as well as in the public, that they're, hey, we do have a crisis on our hands, and it's actually a democratic crisis. You know, if journalism goes down, we're in trouble. And so I'm glad that there's a torch, you know, a candle been lit for that, and that we're actually paying attention. So I'm hopeful around that. A lot, I mean, go and read the submissions. Some of them are fabulous. They're inspiring. And there's some very practical solutions in there around tax breaks, you know, not-for-profit status, et cetera. There's a great US model, in fact, for that sort of thing. I think there are some quite practical solutions to at least making things a bit better and helping to stop the spiral. Interestingly, with politicians, though, and when it comes to this, their ability to self-publish and bypass, I mean, what's interesting there is this bit of a paradox going on here for them. And what my further research shows is in talking to some of these media advisors and things from all parties, is that on the one hand, you know, clearly you can't turn back time, you can't turn back technology, and you can't wish social media away. It's there.
Yeah.
And you are going to publish with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a given. And you're an idiot if you don't. Actually, okay. So on the one hand, you're going to take advantage of it. But on the other hand, they are also aware, these operators are aware that in doing so, they are also under less scrutiny. Now, some of them bemoan that. Some of them applaud it. All of them feel a bit uneasy about it.
It's interesting.
It is interesting. One of the big gaps, though, and I think, you know, this is really important, is to do with regional areas. So particularly politicians who are, you know, big seats in regional areas and things like that. So they're press secretaries and, you know, they go out and they'll live stream, you know, the press conference from, you know.
Galag and Bone or wherever.
Indeed. And there's no one else there.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly.
And so, in fact, there is a public interest element there because, you know, on the one hand, it's a community service. You know, there is public interest in that information being out there and being, you know, passed on. But there's no one there to ask, you know, ask the tough questions while it's happening. And so there's a huge amount of self-interest to get it out as well. So there is this kind of bizarre convergence.
Yes.
And it's tricky. And those feeds are then being recorded back here in Parliament House, but there hasn't been the money to send someone out there.
Yes.
you know, so there's actually, when it comes to regional areas, it's quite a delicate situation there, actually. I mean, because they're very reliant then on politicians being their own broadcaster.
Yes. Yeah, well, increasingly, because news organisations don't have the resources to deploy as substantially as we once did. So,
no, that's right.
And then that exacerbates the trend, and then that sort of makes us more captive of their processes. Anyway, it's been a great conversation. I really appreciate it. And there's
my voice is just warming up, so I could probably keep going.
We could go on for hours, but we better not. I hope we've given you quite a lot of thoughts there to process about social media and about general trends in media and about public interest journalism and the various sort of trends that are coming together in some sort of scary-ish ways, really, at this point in time. And so thank you very much, Carolyn, for joining us.
My absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget you can subscribe to this podcast series via iTunes or your favourite podcast app. Don't forget to do that if you like it. Also, don't forget to leave us a rating or a review if you happen to be lurking around iTunes with intent. That's always very helpful to raising awareness about this podcast. The chat is produced, as it always is, by marvellous Miles Martignoni, who also produces Guardian Australia's other podcasts, including Behind the Lines, and you can go looking for it in the same way that you search for us. And having had a short break, apologise for a week of radio silence. We're now back in our weekly transmission mode, and we'll be back again next week with some other staggering political insight. Until we do that, go well.